I should tell you, in light of your car show, that my first car was a 1946 Chrysler. I bought that out in South Dakota where I grew up, and I bought it for $60. And yeah, it was a flathead six. It had the back doors that opened backwards, and it had like a fluid drive, and everything was going good until one day my sister was driving it, and she left the emergency brake on, and the car started on fire. So that was big news in our little town. And the whole interior, the front seat burned up, and it was quite a mess there for a little while. So I can still remember giving that guy, I was so excited, giving that guy three $20 bills for that car and getting the title for the car. I was so excited about it. So that was so great. Hey, there was a football coach named Pepper Rogers, and he went to UCLA to coach football. And they had been mostly used to a passing offense. But he tried to install what they called, back in those days, a wishbone, which was more of a running offense. And so there was big controversy, and things weren't going well. And he told his wife he thought he only had one friend, his dog. So his wife said, every man should have at least two friends. So she bought him another dog. And this is what he said about that offense, because they were trying to twist his arm. Trying to twist his arm to change, go back to the way we were. This is what he said. If you believe in it, speaking of his offense, if you believe in it only until something goes wrong, you didn't believe it in the first place. And that relates to matters of faith as well. If you believe in it, if you believe in the Bible, if you believe in the sovereignty of God, if you believe in prayer, if you believe in walking with the Lord, only until something goes wrong, you didn't really believe in it in the first place. I'd like to talk about that today. If you turn your Bibles to Genesis chapter 37, this is the story of Joseph. In Hebrews chapter 11, Joseph is commended as a person of faith. The president of the Christian Missionary Alliance, John Stumbo, in one of the video blogs that he sends to the pastors, said that faith is a choice to act on what we know to be true despite what we see and feel. So we're going to study the life of Joseph here today, because he acted on what he knew to be true despite what he saw and felt. And so look at Genesis 37, and verse 2 says a little bit about Joseph and how he felt and he saw dysfunction. Maybe you see dysfunction in a church. Maybe you see dysfunction in a family. Maybe you see dysfunction in a workplace. Just because there's dysfunction doesn't mean that we can't be a person of faith. So look at here in Genesis 37 and verse 2. This is the account of Jacob, which is Joseph's dad. Joseph, a young man of 17. Now, I want you to keep in mind the various ages of Joseph as we go through his story. Here he is, a young man of 17. Remember those days? He was tending the flocks with his brothers. I like family farms. I like family ranches. I like family businesses. I like family churches. And it says later on in verse 2 that he brought their father a bad report about them. There was some dysfunction going on with the family. Now Israel, that's another name for Jacob, his dad. You know that story, how Jacob had a wrestling match with the angel of the Lord, and after that wrestling match, God said that your name is no longer Jacob. Your name is Israel. And the name Israel means he struggles with God. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. Now that's not right. We have to love all our kids the same. because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. Sometimes that's called the robe of many colors. Remember that story about Joseph? And so there was an indication by that act that Joseph was the favored heir, even though he was the 11th of the 12 sons, and there were 10 in front of him by way of seniority. This was an indication that he was going to be the primary inheritor. This didn't seem right to the brothers. And so you see, this is a family of dysfunction. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, I hope this isn't true in your family, they hated him. And could not speak a kind word to him. In churches, we encourage pastors to love the people you have. In your family, love the family that God allowed you to grow up in. We may not like everything about it, but we love. We wish people would hold different attitudes. We wish people would do different things. We wish people wouldn't say things the way they do. We wish people wouldn't try to control everything. But God allowed us to grow up in a family, and I realize that there may be times when we have to draw a boundary. But for the most part, we love the people that are in our family. Not long ago, I went to a time of prayer and encouragement, I guess you would say, in St. Paul. And it was a bunch of groups that support missionaries all getting together, not just the Christian Missionary Alliance, which we're part of, and thanks for your support of the CMA, but all broad spectrum of groups. And we were concentrating on the nation of Tibet. Now, Tibet is in Asia. It's a very mountainous region. The average elevation of that country is 16,000 feet. Now, we go to Colorado Springs one time because that's where the Alliance has their headquarters. But at Pikes Peak, I think it's like 14,000 feet. But that's the highest peak around there, or near the highest. And here is 16,000, the average elevation, and of course the highest elevation is Mount Everest, which is 29,000 feet, and very, very hard to breathe. And the gospel has been slow in advancing in that part of the world. And so the idea was to get everybody together so that we could cooperate to try to reach, and they brought four men from Tibet there who had been won to Christ. And they each gave up and gave a talk about how they came to Christ. And these four were out of seven known believers in Tibet that were in the United States, and very, very few believers in that part of the world. And they talked about the blood of Christ, and they talked about the cross, and man, they had very authoritative, spiritually authoritative lesson. But the guy that led the meeting said something very important to us all as we committed ourselves to reaching the people of Tibet. He said, if you want to go, it was an old African proverb. He said, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And that's how it is with churches too. Oh, we wish things would happen faster. That's how it is with our families too. Oh, we wish things would, we were talking about camping earlier, and I wish we could get the tent up faster. You know, I wish all the things that go with that. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Even if there is dysfunction. because you can be a person of faith even in the midst of dysfunction. Joseph was. Notice second. Joseph saw and felt humble circumstances. You know what his brothers did? They wanted to kill him first. But then one brother intervened and put him in a cistern. I don't know. Have you ever had a house with a cistern? We did. It's kind of like, I don't suppose it was cement back in those days, but in our little cistern, it was a thing under the floorboards that held the water, and it was like made out of cement. It was a water holding place. So they put him in there, kidnapped him. Then some Ishmaelite traders happened to come by in the desert, and they decided, let's not kill him. Let's sell him as a slave. So he has the humble circumstances of having his brothers hate him, and they wanted to kill him, but they didn't kill him, and they put him in a cistern, and they sold him as a slave, and then they took some animal blood, they killed an animal, took the blood of it, put it on the robe, brought the robe back to the dad and said, hey, is this Joseph's robe? Like they were innocent guys, you know. Hey, is this Joseph's robe? Oh, the father says, he must have gotten attacked by an animal, he's dead. Oh, the father was just, they let their father grieve for years. So these Ishmaelite traders take their new slave, Joseph. They go to Egypt. They don't want him. They sell him to somebody in Egypt. A government official named Potiphar buys him. He's starting to work around the household of Potiphar. Potiphar's wife is attracted to him. She wants to participate in sinful conduct with him. He says, no, how could I sin against God and do this terrible sin? I can't do it. She's upset. She tells a false story about him. He's falsely accused of a crime. He gets put in prison. Man. Humble circumstances. One after another. You know how long he was in prison? 41:46. Joseph was 30 years old. Remember the first age we talked about? 17. He was in prison for 13 years for something he didn't do. And I don't think it was the kind of prison where you got three meals a day. Joseph. While he was in prison, two persons who served the king followed up. They got sent to prison. And Joseph ministered to them, and he so impressed them. But one was put to death. The other was brought back to his service to the king. And Joseph said, hey, when you get back, tell the king about me. I'm falsely accused here. And here I sit in prison. Okay, look at the humble circumstance that continues in chapter 40 and verse 23. Oh, now there's hope. Now there's hope. Joseph had been in prison for 11 years, and now there's hope. Oh, he's going to get out. The chief cupbearer, the guy that got out, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Isn't that the way it goes sometimes? Chapter 41, verse 1. When two full years had passed, 2 years, he forgets him for 2 years. The king has a dream. He's troubled by it. So then, all of a sudden, the chief cupbearer remembers about Joseph and how God did it. As a matter of fact, it says in chapter 41, verse 16, when the king called him forward and asked to have him interpret his dream, he says, "I cannot do it," Joseph replied to Pharaoh, who is the king, "but God will." I can't do it, but God will. That's a good strategy for all of us. I can't do it, but God will. I can't have a Bible study, but God will. I can't have a car show and have it be fruitful, but God will. I can't. You put in the blank the words that are where you are at. Do you have a change that you need to see in your family's life? We can't do it, but God can. Whoa. Help us, Lord. When we were, I pastored in Minnesota and Pennsylvania and Illinois. So, and now we're back here. But when we were in Pennsylvania, our friend was pastoring nearby, maybe half hour away, a little bit longer. He invited us to come to his church. They had a special speaker. And so we came to his church, but the special speaker, you could hardly hear the guy. It was like he whispered. And something was wrong with his voice. And so then we learned his story. He had been pastor's kid and had really been seeking the Lord and had a family all through time and always was seeking the Lord. But he thought his testimony was boring because he didn't have a bunch of sins in his life like some people have in their story. He was a sinner. Certainly all of us are sinners, but he thought his testimony was boring, but then it became not boring. He got a vocal injury, and he had a surgery that was near his larynx, and the surgery, something went wrong, and he ended up with only 5% ability in his voice. And so now he was a pastor. He had to quit being a pastor, couldn't speak, except with great pain, and he was there doing that special meeting. Oh my, he was hurting, but he wanted to tell his message. And he had to give up, he was a musician, he could play the guitar and sing. He even had to give up his home. They lost his work, his income, so I think he went to stay either with his parents or his wife's parents. He and his family did. So lost everything. And he's still that way today. That's been, probably 20-some years ago. But what he does now? He writes books. He writes books about the cross. He writes books about the blood of Christ. He writes books about our walk with the Lord that are deeper than what most of us could grasp. And God is using him in the midst of his humble circumstances to reach people for Christ. And many times, the very thing that is the most humiliating, the very thing that is the most humbling, will be the thing that God uses us with in the life, in the lives of others. So dysfunction and humility. Joseph saw and felt them both, but he was a person of faith. We're going to see that. Number three, Joseph saw and felt missteps in his own relationships. So part of the dream that he interpreted for the king, for the Pharaoh, was that there was a huge famine coming that was going to last 7 years. And so there's going to be 7 years of abundant crops with good crops, and then that will be followed by 7 years. So let's save up during the times of plenty so that we have enough during the times of famine. And he put Joseph in charge of everything. Joseph was in charge of the whole thing, and it worked beautifully. It just worked beautifully. So part of the people that were suffering from the famine was Joseph's family. They thought he was long gone. They thought he was out of their lives. And so what do? They come to Egypt looking for food. Who's in charge of the food? Joseph. But he recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. And it says in chapter 42, in verse 7, as soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger, and he spoke harshly to them. "Where do you come from?" he asked. Now, we're not going to get too hard on Joseph here, but whenever there's pretending, and you think, well, they deserve it, whenever there's harsh speech, it might not be the best. So Joseph, in the midst of all the good that he did, still had some missteps in his own life. And I want to tell you here, just because you have missteps in your relationships doesn't mean that you can't be a person of faith. We try, we fail, we trust, God succeeds, the old saying goes. I appreciate the inquiry about missions. One of our missionaries in Vietnam years ago was Charlie Long. He wrote a book about his experiences there. And his wife and two kids were with him, but the war was starting to heat up back in the 60s, and so he had them go live at a safer place, and he was there because it wasn't going to be long that he would have to leave too. And he wanted to translate into Jirai the scriptures so that they could have at least the Psalms and the New Testament. They wouldn't have the whole Bible, but they would have the Psalms and the New Testament. So he was really going at it because the war was heating up. And so there was a mission compound, a church compound, and the church building was in front, and the pastor's house was in back, and then there was a little shack out clear in the back. That's where Charlie lived, and he was going to work night and day on this scripture along with some translators. Well, one day somebody got through all the levels of trying to keep Charlie alone so he could work. And it was a young man. He was 15. And Charlie said, he came in and says, "What do you want?" in a gruff way. And Charlie said it was not only culturally inappropriate, but it was unchristlike. And the young man said, "I heard that you can help people with leprosy. Will you help me?" And one of the ways that the Alliance Church has grown in Vietnam over the years, leprosy is just about wiped out now in parts of the world, but they made these leprosariums and they reached thousands of people for Christ that had leprosy. Oh, Charlie was just crushed that he had been so gruff with this young man. He came back a month later. The guy came back and gotten some help medically, but he came back and he had led 5 people to Christ. And this is what Charlie says in his book. Being Christ-like can take no holidays, even if you're translating the Holy Scriptures. Wow, God has got us on a journey, man. And that journey is toward Christ-likeness. He is working in us all to make us more Christ-like. And sometimes you know what's that's going to take? He's going to use dysfunction. He's going to use humble circumstances. And he's going to even use our own missteps. Because we couldn't become more like Christ unless we go through whatever life brings our way under the sovereignty of God. So with all that Joseph saw and felt, why is he listed as a person of faith? He's listed as a person of faith because he chose to act on what he knew to be true despite what he saw and felt. So, as we conclude, let's look at what he said here. There's a couple of passages near the end of this book. Look at chapter 45 and verse 5. Here's what he says to his brothers after he reveals himself to his brothers. "And do not be distressed, and now do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years, there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Then look at this astounding statement in verse 8. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. Do you wonder why you were put in the family you were put in? Do you wonder why you work where you work? Do you wonder why you go to school where you go to school? Do you wonder why you go to church where you go to church? It was not you, but God. Then, in chapter 50, after his dad died, they thought that now that his dad was dead, it's going to be curtains for us, the brothers thought. Chapter 50 and verse 19. But Joseph said to his brothers, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God?" Oh, this is a good one to memorize, everybody. It's called having 50-20 vision. Genesis 50-20. You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. To accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then, don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children. And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. And Joseph stayed in Egypt along with all his father's family. He lived 110 years. 17 years in his original home, 13 years in prison, 80 years. 80 years left. God has a lot to do through you in these upcoming decades, if he allows us to live, and he doesn't return to, in his second coming. He's got a lot for us to do. He's working in us. He's working in us. Well, maybe you had some Fords here yesterday. Henry Ford, you know, started the Ford Motor Company, and they built these mass production plants, and there was a genius of electrical engineer named Charles Steinmetz who designed these huge generators that allowed the plants to work in Dearborn, Michigan. And whoa, were they making money. They were mass producing cars. And were they making money. And then all of a sudden everything went dark. No power. Something happened. They called in the mechanics. They tried to get everything fixed. They couldn't get it fixed. So they said, "We got to go to the designer." So they call up Charlie. He says, "Charlie, we got trouble. We need your help." So Charlie comes. In a matter of a few hours, he finds out what's wrong with the generators, and he fixes it. So he sends a bill to Henry Ford, $10,000. Henry was stunned, even though he was a wealthy man. He said, in writing back to Charlie, sending back his bill for a modification, he said, "Don't you think this is a little steep for tinkering with some motors for a couple of hours?" And so Charlie thought about it. He says, "Oh, that might be right." So he wrote him a new bill for tinkering on motors for a couple of hours, $10. For knowing where to tinker, $9,990. And Ford paid the bill. Well, there might be dysfunction like there was at UCLA. There might be humble circumstances. There might be missteps. But that coach stayed there. His first year, he won at Pepper Rogers. He won 2 games, lost 7, tied 1. The next year, though, they went 8-3. And the next year, he went 9-2. And then he went to his alma mater, which was Georgia Tech. And he served there for 6 years. And he kept his saying. He said, if his offense, he said, because if you believe in it only until something goes wrong, you didn't believe it in the first place. So when things go wrong in your life, let the word of God, let the sovereignty of God, let the loving kindness and the care of God buoy us all so that we can, in the midst of our dysfunction and our humble circumstances and even our own missteps as we confess them to the Lord, be persons of faith.